Toscano. My name is Phil Finica, and I'm an Onondaga Haudenosaunee and Americans say Seneca Iroquois. But Onondaga Haudenosaunee means people of the Great Hill building the longhouse. I started Good Mind Seeds 5 years ago because most of the Northeastern native varieties of corn, beans, and squash were exterminated during the first 400 years of colonization. And now I'm trying to kind of accumulate what's still around and also develop new varieties that are adapted to this climate and soil.
So you said that the native varieties were exterminated. Like, can you explain a little bit more what that means? Because I think a lot of people have heard about, like, you know, corn is native to this continent and things like that. But I don't think many people realize that there were a lot of plants and fruits and vegetables that actually were native here that haven't survived. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah. Well, in Haudenosaunee creation history, corn is actually older than humanity. And should I go into that at all, the creation story?
Yeah, definitely. Because I'm reading a book about that right now, actually. I don't know if you heard about this book. It's called God is Red by... I think his name is, I don't know how to pronounce his first name, but the last name is Valoria or Deloria.
Ryan Deloria.
Yeah, him. And that book is really interesting because it's talking about, like, the difference between Native American religious practices and how they view the world and how that really comes into conflict with Christianity and how there's, like, a really big difference between how the different, you know, epistemologies view the world and how that has sort of like certain repercussions for how you treat the world, depending on how you see it. So I haven't finished reading the book yet, but I think I kind of understand what you mean though. So definitely go ahead with that.
Well, in the sky world, it's the world that hovers above this one. And in the center of the village in sky world, there's a tree. There was a tree that, its leaves, when you burn its leaves, it smelled like tobacco. And on the top of the tree was a luminous orb that lit sky world. And all the fruits that humans needed to survive would grow on its branches. And at the center, underneath the tree, the chief of the village lived there, and he married the most beautiful woman in the village. And on their wedding day, his passionate breath impregnated her. Unbeknownst to him, and he got very jealous whenever he saw she was starting to get pregnant and very large, and so his anger and jealousy drove him to pull out the tree at its roots, and Sky Woman didn't object because she was curious and wanted to see what was underneath the roots of the tree, because no one had ever seen what was beneath the earth of Sky World. And when the whole village was gathered together to pull out the tree, even Sky Woman assisted in pulling it up. So once the hole was made where the tree once was, she looked down inside of the blackness to see what was there and couldn't see a thing. So the chief said behind her, why don't you look closer? And when she moved in closer to see what was in the hole, he pushed her. And she started to fall down, and she grabbed a root that had been a root of the tree that was still sticking there, and some berries and seeds. But it was no good, and she plummeted down into the darkness. And on the way down, there were geese that caught her so that she wouldn't plummet to the water and the turtle came up so that she would have somewhere to stand. She stood on the turtle's back. And different animals came around and said that she would need more than just the bare back of the turtle to survive. So the different animals were going down to try to reach the bottom of the ocean to get muck to smear on the turtle's back. They're one by one. And the ducks came up dead, and the different animals would come down. Oh, geez. The different. How's it go? None of the animals could survive back up to the surface except for the muskrat, who managed to smear the muck across the turtle's back before he gasped his last breath. And as soon as he did that, the muck began to grow and turn into soil. And Sky Woman plunged the root and berries into the dirt, and from that a new tree grew, and its leaves smelled like the tobacco, and it had a luminous orb on top that lit the darkness of the world below. And she gave birth to her baby there underneath that tree, and she was the firstborn in that world, this world. I'm having a hard time.
No.
And I'm just a shy person, I think, and I'm good at gardening.
Yeah, don't worry about it, man. It's totally fine. Like, I'm definitely interested in what you're trying to say.
So she was giving birth to firstborn in this world, and when she was born, she grew very, very quickly, and she started to run around the entirety of the turtle's back over and over, and every time she made a lap around the turtle's back, she grew, and so did the size of the island, and it got so large that you couldn't run around it anymore. And so there were times whenever firstborn could play away from her mother and the base of the tree. And one of the days that she was playing alone, she was swinging on a vine, and she felt a strange tickle from the wind. And she came back home and told her mother about what had happened, and Sky Woman said that she'd been visited by Gahan, who is the wind, and that she would have his children. And that firstborn became pregnant, and she was pregnant with twins. And the one twin was born first, and he was perfect without any malignities, and the second twin was born. He conspired when he was born second, and he conspired to kill his mother from within her, and he crawled out through her armpit, and she died. And so when firstborn died, her body was buried, and her body became the three sisters, the corn, beans, and squash, and also Apios, the groundnut, and sunroot, which is also called Jerusalem artichoke. And then Good Mind went on to create humanity out of the earth.
And who is Good Mind again? Just remind us who that is.
Good Mind is the son of the firstborn in this world, who's the grandson of Sky Woman.
Okay, so he's the one that
Good Mind's
he's the one that came out like normally, like, and then the evil one is the one that came out through her armpit, basically. Okay, I got it now.
And he was all warty and ugly.
Okay.
And the people from Skyworld, they had the power to create with words. And Good Mind inherited that from his mother, who was from, like, the first born in this world, daughter to Sky Woman. Her father was the chief of Skyworld. And she could create with words, and so could Good Mind. But Bad Mind didn't have that power. And was very jealous. Jealous of Good Mind when he created humanity. He was jealous of humanity also. And he created, he put poison in the snakes and spiders, and he put spines on the bushes and vines and things, and just tried to make life hard for the humans. And, I'm just trying to relate the importance of agricultural, like, domesticated plants in pre-Columbian Haudenosaunee life, like, in our creation history. Corn is older than humanity, even. So,
But you know, to me, it sounds like when you or when someone who is from this particular culture, when they're handling the seeds or when they're planting, it's not just like we're planting these seeds because we just want to eat. It seems like there's a lot more going on. Like you have like more of a connection to what you're actually doing. Does that sound right?
And when humans and corn have a sacred relationship, and it's not like how animal domestication is, where you have humans in the steppes of Russia, civilized humans, forcing the captivity and inbreeding of animal species in, like, the so-called old world. If you have a community of animals and a community of plants that co-evolve over thousands of years, that's symbiosis. It's not domestication necessarily.
Right.
So we have this relationship that formed with a plant species, with many different plant species. We have really these relationships, but I think that there's this quintessential relationship with corn. Excuse me. And even the genetically modified corn that's been abused and damaged by humans growing it, still is holding up its side of the relationship. It's still being responsible for, because it's still surviving through everything that's been done to it. And even though we can see that these genetically modified varieties are destroying the species that they are, it is also at the same time a testament to the strength of life, and a testament to the fact that what they've done so far won't kill life itself. They won't stop life from continuing on.
Yeah,
Because these
I see what
genetically
you mean.
modified varieties exist today.
Yeah, I think this corn example is a good one to use because like on your website you have a picture of I guess it's like the more of the natural or how corn used to look like.
Well, it does now, but that's well, in 1971, there was a forced relocation of Seneca, Allegheny Senecas from the Allegheny Reservation, which used to be in that on the Allegheny River in Pennsylvania, and now it's just over the to the New York border in Salamanca, New York.
Okay.
And So it was two generations forced relocation into a already established white American city, and they burned and flooded the reservation and burnt built the Kinzua Dam there. And this corn is from the pre-Kinzua Allegheny Reservation.
That's what used to grow there before they put the dam there. Okay. But like the corn that we when we go to the supermarket, like we don't I've never seen corn like this in the supermarket or even at the farmers market. So it seems like there's been some sort of change in what we're provided and like what used to be there. I think I've seen pictures of corn also from Mexico. They still have this variety down there that grows where indigenous people there in Mexico still have this sort of variety there. But here in the United States, I guess, as you know, they have
Yeah,
basically.
most corn's consumed is oil and syrup
Yeah,
in
but what,
America.
how did they get the corn to just be all the same, like that same yellow color? Like how did that come about? Like, you know what I mean?
Oh, well, I think that they made potatoes white too, and I think that this blending of food into this like creamy consistency and the bleaching of it to the whiteness and the light colors. I think that that is trying to make food as close to mother's milk as possible because they have post-traumatic stress disorder, and they
That's
want to
interesting.
get it's that they want to get back to the mother's milk because that comfort and that connection has been broken and deprived them from a very early stage. And they're constantly trying to get it back, but they don't know how to, and they misunderstand a lot of the time. And I think that's also why there's drug abuse and alcoholism and that sort of thing, because you can get that feeling of connection and that feeling of comfort, but it's false, and then you keep going back for more because you can't get enough of what you don't really want.
I never thought of
But
it that
anyhow,
way.
with the corn and the potatoes and the bread and everything becoming really white and creamy and homogenized, yeah, I think that that's the reason. Like I think the higher the level of trauma and the more dependent on civilization society becomes, you'll see the more simple and the more whitewashed their foods will become. The less willingness to for the, of the children, or the more traumatized a child is, the more they'll want to just have the same consistent environment all the time and have control over it.
That's an interesting
But
way of looking at things, yeah. I never thought of it exactly that way, but it does make a lot of sense, though.
they wanted to exact complete control, and how can you control something more than to kill it? And so what they did was is they just took the one that reminded them of the thing they separate themselves from. It's like they burn away their mother and they destroy the forest, and then they turn all of the corn to this milky white. And so I just think that that's the connect that's I've connected the dots.
It makes sense. It definitely makes sense. Like, and so I want to mention. So I want to talk about something you just mentioned, though. We talked about civilization, and how would you say that you view civilization right now? Like, where do you see things going? Like, I can imagine that as someone who works closely with the land, like you probably can see how. Or like you know about like how the land has been changed here in this country so drastically from what it used to be. So like where do you what problems do you see with this sort of civilization that we have now, and like where do you see things going if they continue like on the same path that we're on right now?
All right. So if you within a natural or indigenous worldview or mindset, and within like a healthy relationship with the self and the earth, then you have examples of how people have lived successfully and sustainably since time immemorial, and you have many examples of how to live that way.
Right.
But whenever you live within a civilized society, all of the examples of how to sustain and how to survive through the problems that living within a civilized society causes, there are no examples to learn from because no one has ever survived civilization.
Hmm.
All of the civilized societies of history have gone extinct and disappeared, and their relics and ruins have turned into dust.
Right, like the Romans and the Greeks and stuff like that, right?
And, yeah, the Olmecs and the Incans and, you know, the ancient Egyptians. Civilization lived in Asia, in Eastern Asia and India and for thousands of years before it came here.
Hmm.
And I think that's why they call it the Old World, is because it's been mutilated longer.
Right, right. Yeah. I mean, I think here is easier to see. I was talking to someone not too long ago about what's going on in, like, they call it, like, the breadbasket of the United States, where, like, they've just totally flattened the landscape. Like, they've gotten rid of a lot of the forest that used to be there, and now it's just basically fields of this corn and wheat and everything. Like, all the buffalo have been exterminated, and they flattened hills, and everything is just totally different. It's just totally different.
The Northeast, they exterminated the corn here, and the different crops grown here to survive the food economy of the people here, because that's the way you get at a people. You can destroy the foundation of their economy, and then everything else falls out of place, and they become dependent on the colonial economy. And so Lincoln built that railroad across the plains and shot all the buffalo, knowing that it would cripple the warrior societies of the plains.
Wait, Lincoln?
Because they wouldn't have
But Abraham Lincoln? I thought that he was some sort of saint or something. They were supposed to worship him because he freed the slaves or something. Hold up.
Well, the day before he freed the slaves, there was a mass hanging of Native people. That he ordered the mass, like the largest mass execution in U.S. history.
Well, you never hear about that.
But and the whole slavery thing, I think, is really a lot of political hogwash and false flag kind of stuff, where they were utilizing people, once again, utilizing the struggles of oppressed people to fuel their agenda, that where they're already the elite, and they utilize, they exploit people's grief and suffering in an attempt to maintain their power structure. It's a disgusting display, in my opinion.
Yeah. I mean, I was sort of joking, but I think people have, like, a lot, you know how they teach history here? They don't really teach it the way it really happens, so... I wasn't aware of that, like, one example about Lincoln, but I know that he wasn't this sort of, like, you know, shining figure of goodness that people think that he is, but,
I can't remember exactly any of the quotes that he said about, that were, like, really blatantly anti-African, but, I remember them being there in my mind, in the back of my mind.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Like, he
said stuff.
He was a hypocrite, blatantly. There's this federal law, this U.S. treaty law, that dictates that at least 75% of the land area of the United States belongs to Native nations.
It says 75%?
At least.
Wow.
If you have a really conservative interpretation of the law, then yeah. And so it really... what you need is to be constantly breaking international and federal United States law and Native law of, like, pretty much every Native nation that's ever interacted with the United States. Everyone. It's breaking incredible. Like, if law ever meant a damn thing, you know?
Yeah.
So people tell me, like, they tell me that they don't want to get involved with the sort of talk. Because they don't want to be revolutionaries. They don't want to have a revolution. It's like, neither do I. I just want to obey the law. All
right? Right, right. Yeah, I see what you mean. Like, I think I told you this the first time we spoke. Like, I was researching the tribes here in Pennsylvania, like trying to find out, some history. And I found out that a lot of them were pushed off into Oklahoma or whatever and other western states. And I like once you start looking into the history of this country and you start realizing what's happened, like you can never really it's really difficult to pretend like you don't know, like after you know it. And I think a lot of people don't want to know, you know what I mean? Because then you have to start questioning the whole foundation of what it
Well, to
means.
deny something, implicit in denial is knowledge of what you're in denial about. You can't avoid something without knowing it's there.
Right. Yeah, that's kind of true. I mean, people have an idea, I think, at least a vague idea in their mind of like something happened here that wasn't right, and they know that there's like an injustice that's is being perpetuated against people. But for them, for the injustice to be fixed, it would mean that some people would have to give up something. You know what I mean?
Children know it. Children don't have to be told. They can see the evidence and they know it. And what they have to be told by the establishment is against the better judgment. It's against what they would rationally perceive on their own. And they are just inundated with so much bigotry and so many lies that it's like a fish swimming in water. It can't see the air. It can't see the water it's breathing because everything is drenched in the anti-Indian sentiment.
Yeah, of course. And I mean, because what it comes down to when you're dealing with Native Americans is it is the land that we're living on. Because, like, you can't do anything without land. Like, you can't, I mean, if you don't have land, you can't farm, you can't do anything. I mean, you have to have some solid foundation to build on.
United States has never gained legal claim to the land, according to its own laws, international law, native law. Every place here was a, is a resting place of some native people, and it's all still legally owned by native people.
I know we got a little bit away from the main topic, but I think it's important to talk about these things because, like, your identity as a Native person has definitely impacted, like, what you're doing with Good Mind Seeds and the way that you relate to your work. You know what I mean? So I think it's important to also to have like a conversation about that, and I'm glad we did get a chance to cover that. Like, but what I want to talk about real fast is like, I want to get back to this idea of the GMOs because I think like I think this idea or this well not it's not an idea because it's really happening, but I think this practice of genetically modifying things is a really, really good example of how this culture just really seeks to control like everything and how like there was so much natural diversity, there's so much natural variety that existed before. That's been destroyed, and now in order to make up for what's been lost, they want to use this genetically modifying
No,
trickery.
they don't intend to replace anything that's been lost. They're just weaponizing even more aspects of the natural world. They're using our crops themselves as biological weapons against our land and our bodies.
Can you explain
No,
that a
it's
little bit
even
more?
they plan to scarcify food to the point where human life is a commodity that they can buy and sell. I mean, I think that it's pretty much to that point. 99% of the corn and what 98% of the soy and whatever else in the U.S. is all patented. So, once you privatize, see, this is part of the privatize. This idea that you can buy and sell land is the beginning of the privatization of the commons. In addition to the fact that it synthesizes proteins that have never existed in nature before and create pathologies that are so numerous and incredible that they're nearly impossible to study, because how can you tell if, like, the diabetes, the cancer, the asthma, the allergies, like, what is, there's the people with different allergies that they have before they were in contact with GMOs. They get exacerbated by the GMOs, so you can have conditions that might not necessarily be directly correlated with GMOs, and because, like, how can you tell if the cancer is from the synthetic chemicals they're eating, the genetically modified material they're eating, the nuclear power plant down the way, their cigarettes, or the car exhaust? And
right.
You know, how can,
yeah.
When you have so many different sources of disease at once, it's like a smog screen for these corporations to hide behind.
Hmm.
And they don't ever have to be held accountable, because there's no way to prove their kind of their culpability. And we have pharmaceutical, chemical, agricultural corporations all linked together, and their CEOs are in positions in the government. They're the FDA and the USDA, and so this really is the complete, and like, when people talk about fighting a war to save our food, it's like, no, we lost it. We already lost that war. And if you want to wage one now, fight to get your food back and be realistic about it. Because maybe in India, they're fighting to keep their food.
Hmm.
But here in the U.S., this war has already been fought and lost. And I think that it started 500 years ago. We have an intrinsic nature, and there is natural law. There's this reality that continues to exist even after we die.
Mm-hmm.
And when we go against natural law, it causes pathology. And that's pretty much why it's law. You know, it wouldn't be important if it didn't affect us. So
right.
We look at the way we live and how all of our perceptual reality has already been filtered through other human beings. It's already been chewed up and regurgitated into our mouths.
Mm-hmm.
Like TV, radio, all the music, the honking of horns and the cars and the city sounds that there are, the sounds of other human beings. And we're always inside. And so it's like disturbing to our nature when we don't get access to, even as you said, that park in Philadelphia where you can hear maybe some birds chirping and the wind going through the trees, and you can smell the scent of the decomposition of the grass under your feet.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
And if you don't get that, you're gonna go insane. You know, it's just basic.
Yeah, yeah. Are you familiar at all with Derek Jensen, his writing?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's talked a lot about how he thinks that this culture that we're living in is basically just like a culture of insane people, because we've been totally cut off from we've been cut off from sanity, and we're living in sort of an insane asylum of people who are
cut off from memory. Cut off from memory. It's
yeah.
Like the tribe of people that don't know who they are, and it's that they are unified in that lack of memory.
You've been doing this work with the seeds for, you said, 5 years now?
Mm-hmm. I mean, I've gardened my whole life, but I only started saving seeds seriously for the past 5 years.
Yeah, I forgot to ask you, like, who first got you into this? So was it someone from your family or a friend of yours, or how did you first start getting interested in this?
Well, my mother was the first, my mother was the first generation to not farm in my family, and she had a large kitchen garden, and I grew up where my grandfather had farmed corn and tomatoes and strawberries and potatoes, and it's just my mother recognized the importance of not being an electronic child, like having, like, not being in front of the TV all the time, and she wanted me to have real and good food whenever I was eating. And so I was around her gardening a lot, and she would always can lots of food for the winter. She still does, and just always been there. My mother never discouraged me from eating wild foods either. Like, if I was eating any of the berries or leaves outside. She understood. And human beings have a natural sense of, it's like our tongues are really sophisticated electromagnetic sensors, and we can taste the chemistry of things we eat. And we actually are really well adapted to judge what we're eating and tell what it is by its flavors. And that culture of understanding is being completely deadened in the civilized world. And my mother, one of the best things my mother did was never punish me for eating weeds and tree leaves and stuff.
That's cool.
Because now I know what things taste like.
Yeah, that's awesome. So from that upbringing, you decided to start this, and I think we said before, you do call it a business. So how does it actually work? Do you sell seeds on your website, or you trade them, or how does this work?
I sell seeds, and there's no way to get paid for what I do because of the incredible amount of work that goes into preserving these seed varieties. If you went back in time and told an economist from a few hundred years ago that a tomato seed would be over double its weight in gold by this year, that I think that it would, like, they would know that it would be the end of the world. That implies it's the end of the world.
Right.
And I say this because you have an incredible scarcity. The commodification of food, the price of food can't be this high and have people survive at the same time. And in fact, we are seeing a mass starvation of certain demographics of people. So there's no way to get paid for what I do because in this society, I would have to be paid a whole lot of money for it to equate to the value. So it's really difficult to explain. Like, most farmers today feed... American farmers who are into market food production in the grocery store, they feed about 150 to 200 people on average. And they are paid just enough money to survive for the most part.
Right, but they're doing like mass production, right?
They are doing that. They're life support for an entire community of people, basically equivalent of an entire community of people. I just, I'm trying to equate how when you sell, when you take the food of human beings and you sell it on the penny, then that's how much human life is worth. When you have a society that gauges intrinsic value through the amount of money that's assigned, and you have, so like, why in the hell doesn't a mother get paid to cook for her children?
Right.
Because it just means that she has no intrinsic value. But when a man cooks at a restaurant, he gets paid. But whenever a woman is the foundation of a society's existence, it's worthless. And she teaches the next generation how to speak and how to be. You know, what is she paid? And if you have some kind of social program where there is compensation for single mothers or people who aren't in the best economic situation, then they're cast with all these insults in the media. They're called parasites, and they're called this and that. And you know, I just, anytime I hear someone say the term like welfare mother, it just makes my skin crawl because they have absolutely no respect for human life. If you go and say something like that, these women don't deserve to be compensated for being the pillars of any society that exists today, then it's clear to me that you don't understand humanity.
Well, yeah,
your
I mean,
own
this,
humanity.
This culture hates women because it hates life. I mean, and life, you can't have life without women. So, I mean, it's pretty
obvious.
And
you can't control a population. Like, the quickest way to control a population is getting at their mothers.
Right.
I mean, as I was just explaining, they pass down the culture. If you change the mother copy, then every other copy past that is going to have the same flaws. And it's like, I was trying to kill Tree of Heaven. Do you know about Tree of Heaven?
No, I never heard of that. What's that?
a lancis is a Asian tree that was it evolved in volcanic soils, and it's developed to like cover over volcanic eruptions and virgin rock to create new soils where there is none.
Mm-hmm.
And here in PA, we don't have any species that are evolved to do that, because we don't have tectonic plates here. We don't have our volcanoes. We don't, like, there has been no mining or disruption of the soil in the history of Pennsylvania before colonization. So when they make cities and stuff, it just gets covered with Asian plants. And one of these is Tree of Heaven. And there was this forest that was used to be a neighborhood that had a landslide. And most of the trees that came up were ailanthus. And there were a few maples and a few oaks. And I was clearing around the maples and oaks to give them room so that their seedlings could survive. And when I was killing the ailanthus off, I didn't want to destroy all of their root structures as to cause more erosion on that slope. And I didn't want to have to go through the process of cutting them all down, and I didn't want to have to target all of them. So what I did was I just went after the females, and I girdled them, cutting off a portion of their bark so that they would bleed to death and die. And I only went after the females because they're the ones that produce the seeds. If you have, if you're going after the males to sterilize the community, then you'd have to get every single male. And if there was a single male specimen that was able to produce pollen, it would be enough pollen cells, sperm cells, for every ovary in the forest. But each ovary is only capable of producing one seed.
Right, right.
And if you girdle all of the female trees, then there will be no more seeds.
Hmm.
And that's my moment of realization. That's when it clicked, and I realized that's why indigenous women have the highest rape statistic of any demographic. That's why when you have civilized patriarchal societies invading another society nearby, that they rape the women when they had nothing to do with it.
Yeah, yeah. This was the first shocking thing I learned about Columbus was, you probably heard about this, was that when they landed on what's now Haiti or Dominican Republic, that island. The first,
I thought that it was Cuba, but or Puerto Rico, or I don't remember. But
it was they used to call it Hispaniola, but right now they call it Haiti, the part that they landed on first.
Oh, okay. I didn't know it was Haiti, but. Okay.
But they were raping like 10 and 12 year old girls there. And this is what they preferred. Like they didn't even go after the women. They went after the girls. Like, and we have a Columbus Day celebrating this person. You know, it's fucking sickening.
Yeah.
But this destruction of the feminine is really what this whole culture is built on, you know? So let's say somebody wants to, you know, I don't want to say, you're not going to be able to be 100% completely self-sufficient, but like, let's say that someone wants to start growing some food. Let's say they have like an indoor garden or something. Like, what would you say is like a good plant to start with or something, a good place to start, basically?
Greens, roots, and especially beans are really good to start with. Beans have really large seeds, so they have a lot of energy to start off with. When you plant a bean, it germinates pretty quickly, and it's already a foot tall. And then it's very satisfying. And it's also a lot easier, a lot less drought and disease prone than some other things you can grow. They're self-pollinating, so you don't have to worry about the pollination. And they're leguminous, so they fertilize the soil they're grown in more than they take from it. And so beans, they're also, bush beans especially, are really fast, and you can start harvesting them within like 2 months after planting. So like bush beans are really simple, and you can grow them in small containers too, like in a flower box, a window flower box.
Cool.
Other than beans, different diverse greens are good because you can grow mustard, arugula, Persian garden cress, different salad greens and peppery greens in containers. And those are pretty fast to grow because you're just eating the leaf. And then once you start harvesting it, you can be continuously planting new. So you have it growing as fast as you're harvesting. As many premises are false in the history books, the same can be said about how people have been taught to grow food. And Masanobu Fukuoka is called someone who revolutionized agriculture, who is the first to do what he does. And I think that's not true, because really what he was doing was mimicking traditional Japanese agriculture. And he just, instead of saying, what can I do, he said to himself, what can I strip away, what can I not do? And he just stopped irrigating, he stopped tilling, he stopped using any form of input of chemicals or anything. And he found that his yields increased dramatically, and his effort was much less. And so what I'm trying to say is that when people are starting the garden for the first time, it's good not to start practicing the wrong way. My mother is a piano tuner, and people always assume that they should get their children a really low-quality instrument to start practicing on, but that's when they're forming their real understanding of interaction with it. So it should be a good one. And I think that with gardening, you know, people think the first thing they got to do is go out and till up the soil, and tilling destroys 98% of the soil flora.
Oh, wow.
Through exposure to oxygen and sunlight. And it also combusts the humus of the soil by taking, like, the humus is what slowly releases fertility in the soil. The microbes are what do the releasing. So you've killed the flora, and then you take the remaining food and combust it chemically in the oxygen and light. And what happens is those molecules that can only exist in that dark filtered oxygen of the undersoil, they turn into CO2 gas and ammonia. So when people till the soil, it actually releases greenhouse gases.
Hmm. Wow.
And the best thing to do is, the only reason to break the soil is if it's so hard you can't get the seeds in to the soil. And I think that other than that, you know, you can mulch heavily, and you can plant crops that will loosen the soil. And it's just that there's a lot of lies. And you go and you read a book on how to have a garden, and it's going to be mostly lies. Just like how if you go and you read a book about the history of the soil, the same land that you're gardening, it's going to be lies the same.
Right, right.
And it's good to try to diversify your understanding of agriculture from many viewpoints, and also try to put yourself into the position of the soil. Try to think like soil would think. What does the soil want? It has wants and needs. Now look in the wild world. How is soil in the wild world? You see that in the prairie it has a covering of living cellulose, and it's rooted by grasses and held in place. And then in the forests, it's covered by dead leaves and rooted by the tree's roots. So there's never a place in nature where soil is bare. And there's never a place in nature where the soil is being tilled up and moved around, except for just from worms and the occasional earthquake or something.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, so we can look at, people just are so opposed to thinking that they would call me like two handfuls of insult names for saying something like, think what the soil wants, you know?
Right.
But
it's
that's
pretty
the reason why they're driving themselves to extinction.
Yeah.
It's because they would rather bully someone telling them how to live than, you know.
Right. I see what you mean. Like, it seems, when you think about it from a certain perspective, it seems pretty self-evident that you would want to put yourself in the place of something if you look at it as another being or something that has, like, its own, like, life essence. But if you look at it as being just, like, a dead commodity, then of course you would be like, well, why would I want to put myself in that position, because it's not even a real thing or something like that.
It has intrinsic value beyond your existence, and if you die and you disappear, it'll continue to still be there.
Yep.
So its value as something that's existent isn't dependent on your existence.
Yeah, and that's what a lot of people don't understand, I mean, in our society, you know. So the last thing I want to cover is something I think is really important. Like, we touched on this a little bit earlier with the negative impacts of GMOs. Like, we have a very toxic environment that we're living in, and people are suffering from all different sorts of health concerns, a very wide variety. And a lot of these health concerns come from just the very, you know, poisonous atmosphere that we're living in and the negative effects of industrialization. And I just wanted to ask you, you know, how do you see living a more natural lifestyle or eating more natural foods as contributing to people's health? Like, how can people help to heal themselves using, you know, more of a natural way of living?
I think that health is a gift, and it's always a gift, even if you've worked very hard to maintain it.
Mm-hmm.
And the people can oftentimes become very arrogant or snooty about their health and say that it's some form of accomplishment on their part. But it's in fact a gift from creation. And there are many people who are sick beyond any hope of their willpower changing it. And I think that we can only affect our health to an end, and it's really about reducing exposure. One of the worst things... No. There's... you know about these BTE varieties? With the producer on BT toxin?
No, what is it?
BT is a naturally occurring toxin, and they take the gene that produces it in other organisms and inject it into crops so that it produces its own pesticides. In every single cell, there is BT chemical that makes insects' guts explode.
Oh, gosh.
Do you hear me?
Yeah, so they're making that, they're putting that in food.
And then this BT toxin punches holes in our guts also, and it's been causing this condition called leaky gut. And it's where our guts are supposed to be semi-permeable, and they only allow certain kinds of molecules into our bloodstream from our food. Leaky gut allows all kinds of different molecules into our blood that shouldn't necessarily be there. And what that accomplishes is a whole slew of other secondary diseases, like allergies, cancers, autoimmune disorders. And we have symptoms and diseases coming up in all over the body, in every system of the body, because of leaky gut.
Hmm.
And that's just from one genetically modified trait, the BT trait. The BT trait, has been transmitted to human gut flora. So there have been positive tests for transgenic human gut flora.
Wow.
Where they have inherited the sequence that makes the cell synthesize that BT toxin, one of its proteins. So even after these people stop eating genetically modified foods with the BT toxin, it continues to persist in their guts.
So when people have, there's gut bacteria that's inherited those transgenic sequences that make the bacteria produces its own BT toxin. So when you have 2,000 test nukes over Arizona and California, and you have like a nuclear power plant an hour's drive from anywhere in the Eastern Seaboard, and you have Chernobyl and Fukushima, then you add the weird petroleum chemical stuff from fossil fuel and synthesized chemicals. Now, like, you combine all those things, then there's really you have a tough time isolating the cause of disease from this, like, diseases caused by GMOs.
We have all of these really negative things in our environment that some of it we can't control, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So what can we do? I mean, how can we modify our lifestyles or our life ways to try to negate some of these negative forces?
Well, I think I recommend that whenever possible to only eat organic food, because otherwise you're putting yourself at risk for transgenic material and synthetic chemicals, which will cause diseases. And if you aren't wealthy enough to purchase organic food, you can select which foods are the most important to buy organic and try to just get them. Because I know that onions, for instance, non-organic onions have some of the lowest rates of residual herbicide and pesticide, and they have also, to my knowledge, they're not yet transgenic. So if you get the organic potatoes and the non-organic onions, then you're probably better off, because those non-organic potatoes have extra levels of carcinogenic chemicals sprayed and imbued into them. And there's also a transgenic potato that it's not necessarily on the market, but a lot of these corporate producers of potatoes aren't legally bound to disclose whether or not the variety they're growing has transgenic sequences or not, and they could easily be contaminated without our knowledge. If you can't, then try to get it organic whenever you can. Like, just, it's better to, what we don't know really can hurt us, and also when you're buying organic food, research what company you're purchasing from, because I noticed that there are giant eagles here in Pennsylvania, which is like the normal grocery store everywhere is, and all of the corporations they've stocked organic products from are all linked somehow to Monsanto or Syngenta, and they are all against Proposition 37.
Hmm.
And so it's like the genetic, these transgenic, these corporations patenting life are going and becoming their very own opponent market, so that they own the whole market.
Right.
And so when you go and you buy organic food because you don't want Monsanto to own all your food, well, you're paying for Monsanto's food, like Stonyfield and Horizon and all these. Like, if you go and you go to the Home Depot and you get organic Miracle-Gro topsoil, it's still Miracle-Gro, you know, they're still producing all those other chemicals.
Yeah.
With the money you spend to give them.
That sounds like some
where
good
you
advice.
Put your money in.
Right.
Stuff.
That's definitely some good advice. And I mean, are you open to people, like, if they have questions about this, like, contacting you? Like, is there a way people can get in touch with you if they have questions about this stuff?
I have a forum. I made a forum online called the Corn Maiden, and it's Corn Maiden, one word, cornmaiden.proboards.com.
Okay. And can people
And
access this from your website too?
yeah, it's on the front page of the website, and there's a thread there called Politics of Food, and that's there so that people can discuss exactly that. And I'm the only administrator moderator there because, and I made this forum so that women, Indigenous women and mothers and so forth can have a place online that isn't a den of bigots and a source of
Right.
harassment.
Yeah.
The internet is just like
It's a nightmare
horrible
sometimes.
for women and horrible for Indigenous people. It's just a white male bigot land.
Yeah.
So I made this, like, I was trying to trade seed and do different like gardening stuff on different forums, and so like, oh, here's my tomato picture, here's my this is that. And I've encountered some really incredibly genocidal horror just trying to do that. So I was just like, all right, I'll just make my own forum, and if someone cares to join it, then so be it. And so far I have like 40 members, but only a couple of them regularly post.
Okay, well, it's really good that you have something like that, though, for people to talk about these things in a safer space. Because, yeah, you're right. The internet can be a really horrible experience
It's hostile.
sometimes. Yeah.
I'm the only administrator or moderator, so and I'm just not to I'm trying to talk to people who are offensive. I'll just block their IP. I don't care.
Yeah, that's the best thing to do. You can't argue with these people. Like, it's not even worth it. So, but
So
yeah,
it's like, come there, be respect. If you want to come there, fine. Just be respectful or else I'll block you. It's kind of the thing.
promise I'll be respectful if I come there.
You is one. You know what I mean? I say you all the time, but I mean to say one.
I know. But yeah, so I gotta go soon, but this has been a really great conversation, and I hope that we can do it again sometime. Like, I'm definitely open. I feel like we touched on a lot of subjects that definitely we could get deeper into at some point in the future. But I think this was a very interesting conversation, and thanks a lot for doing this, for taking the time.
You're welcome.
Thank you. real. Hip hop.
To the real. Hip hop.